This is Digital Story Podcast number 599, August 29th, 2017. Today's theme is 5 scenarios where analog makes more sense. I'm Derek Story. I've been reading a lot about the Nikon D850 and what an impressive 45 megapixel, $3,300 machine it is. I've also been following the Fuji GFX story and how the market is responding to the 51 megapixel, $6,500 digital medium format body. Those numbers just made me a little dizzy. And it got me thinking about more affordable alternatives for creative photography. And that's the subject for today's show. So I had coffee the other day with a customer who had purchased a Contax RTS from the film camera shop. He was in town via a road trip. It was actually rather fortunate. He's from Canada, but he's been working his way down the California coast. And we started communicating, I think, somewhere around the state of Washington. And we're trying to figure out, okay, you know, maybe I'll be in this town at this time and you can ship it to that FedEx store. And, you know, we're working on all that kind of stuff. And then at one point he says, okay, I'm going to settle in for a little bit in Bodega Bay and I'm ready to buy the camera. And I go, well, I'm in Santa Rosa, which is, you know, just inland from Bodega Bay. And I said, why don't we just meet and have a cup of coffee? Save you the shipping charges, right? And he was all for that. So, and it was kind of cool because a lot of times the people that I sell cameras to, I have correspondence with, but I don't get to sit down and have coffee with them and talk to them. So this was kind of a treat for me. And his name is Kyle. Kyle's a professional photographer, a travel photographer, landscape photographer, makes his living doing photography. So, you know, he was an interesting guy. We're hanging out, sitting outside at Starbucks and just talking about photography and all that. And at some point we got to, well, why is he buying a film camera? And he said, well, it's funny. I shoot with the Sony mirrorless cameras professionally. I just love them, you know, those beautiful full sensor Sony cameras. And he says, they do a great job for me. But a lot of the lenses that I use are Zeiss lenses from the analog days that fit on Contax cameras. And if you're not familiar with Contax, C-O-N-T-A-X, they were a camera company originally out of Germany. And they were very popular with a lot of people, myself included. And then they didn't make a graceful transition to the age of autofocus, mainly because Zeiss actually dug its heels in a little bit at that time, thinking that they could not maintain the standards that they wanted in terms of optical performance in an autofocus lens that used more plastic and, you know, had these additional moving parts. Autofocus is what killed both Yashica and the Contax label. However, the lenses live on. And so Kyle tells me that he owns, I think he said, eight lenses. And they're all very nice. A couple zooms. One zoom I'm going to talk about here in a second. And he says, and you know, they work so well on mirrorless bodies, you can get a inexpensive adapter and use this great glass on them. And he says, so I've been using them on my Sony because not only are they great lenses, but they have a little different look than any other lens that I have access to. And I just love the look, and my clients love the look. So I'm really onto something here. And then he said, it dawned on me one day that here I'm using these great lenses and I could get a film body for them for, you know, relatively cheap. Why don't I shoot some film too? And, you know, really just take it all to the next step. So that's when he found the film camera shop and he found that RTS body. And the RTS body was introduced at Photokina in the 1970s and it made a big splash, big splash. It was designed in cooperation with the Porsche Design Group and Yashica and Zeiss. So pretty neat looking camera. And so now he's excited about shooting film. So he can use his lenses both on his Sony, and he can use his lenses on this new film camera. And it was fun to talk to him about that and to kind of talk about the process where he fell in love with these lenses, but in the digital world, and then they slowly pulled him into the possibilities in the analog world, and now he has an analog camera. And the thing that he said before he had to scoot out was that I just can't describe how good these lenses are and how utterly affordable they are these days. I'm thinking, yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, but I love hearing that. And that's actually my first reason of a situation where analog makes more sense. And that is getting great glass affordably. Great glass affordably. I tell you, I am, even before I give you my example, I have to tell you, I am in lens heaven these days because not only do I have to buy lenses for the camera shop, and they must be tested, but I'm getting to use these lenses that I have read about for years and maybe at one time couldn't afford, but now they are affordable because they have analog camera mounts and all that sort of stuff. And the reintroduction to those optics made in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it's been wonderful because they're really beautiful. Not only beautiful to look at, but they're beautiful to use. So the one I want to talk about that I think is a great example is a Zeiss 35-70 zoom lens, and I believe it's f3.4 all the way through. So it doesn't have a variable aperture, just 3.4 all the way through. If you used to read Pop Photo before its demise, which is just what, a year ago, they used to do these fantastic tests on lenses. And they would build the graphs, you know, so you could see the sharpness or the rating for the sharpness at all the different apertures and all that kind of stuff. It was fun. Very thorough. I remember reading, and I still have their review of this lens, the Zeiss 35-70 and the contacts mount. The thing that jumped out at me then and still blows my mind is that they said that this zoom is at least as good or better than primes at every focal length. At every focal length, so at 35, at 50, at 70, in between, when you're shooting with a zoom, it is like shooting with a prime. Not some de jure prime, but a Zeiss prime. And that just blows me away. That blows me away because at that time, zoom lenses were getting a little bit of a bad rap compared to primes. This was an exception, far and away. And this was a lens that I wanted for wedding photography, because I was shooting with primes in those days for wedding photography, and I was changing lenses a lot. And I was just thinking, gosh, if I could only afford that 35-70 that is sharp all the way through, that would make my life so much easier. Then I would only have to change lenses a few times during the day, not every 15 minutes. But I couldn't afford it. It was, I think $1,400, something like that, then in $1,990. That's a lot of money. I bought that lens about a year ago on the used market in pristine shape, both body and optics, for $289. $289 with both front and back caps. And I use that lens on my Olympus cameras. And it is wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful. I use it more probably on the film bodies, and you know, like Kyle, it kind of goes back and forth. It'll go back and forth between the film and the digital bodies, and it's really nice to be able to use it. But to get that lens, to get that glass, that quality, I mean, legendary, literally, for $289, is just mind-boggling. And it's a lens that I will never sell. I will never sell. They'll have to sell it. My kids will have to sell it after I've moved on to the great dark room in the sky there. So that is just one example of what I see time and time again. And believe me, I know the aftermarket right now. I know the used market because every day I'm in it looking around stuff for the film camera shop. And the glass that you can get affordably that works on the camera that you have now, that is one of my favorite scenarios for, you know, revisiting analog gear. Next one, medium format at a fraction of the price. So I mentioned the Fuji earlier, the GFX, and I've been reading a lot about it and following that story. And you can get a nice kit for, I think, about $8,500, $8,600 at B&H that includes the camera body, I think a battery grip, and a prime lens. In the world of digital medium format, that's pretty good. It's still going to be $9,000 when you're all said and done. And that's just to get started. And that's only with one lens, one back, all that kind of stuff. So $9,000. Of course, the Hasselblad gear is more. So then you're well over $10,000. You get into phase one, you're even more. So medium format in the digital world is definitely not affordable. Not for the person that just wants to shoot medium format every now and then. Now, if you're a professional and you need it for your job, that's different. But most of us don't need medium format for our work. Then it's something that we want to do every now and then. And every now and then, it doesn't make sense to buy digital. It would make a little more sense to rent. You could do that, but then you have the whole, you know, schlepping back and forth thing. So what I propose, analog is a time that medium format makes more sense. And I did a little research on this because I have a Hasselblad 500C and I have two lenses for it. I have the 80 and the 150 for it. And I have two backs. And I've got some nice accessories. It's a nice camera. And I had it worked on, it's been a while now, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. But you know, it works very well. So I was going, okay, how much could I get a Hasselblad 500C for on the market right now? So I did some shopping around, and you can get a 500C body and an 80 millimeter lens and a back in good condition, good functioning condition, for about $900 for a medium format system. The assumption being that you're not shooting all the time with it. It's something that you want to do for special projects, special portraits, landscapes, things like that. So then you're buying some 120 film, you're having it processed and scanned, and so that investment is incremental, and it's not very much, and it would take you a lot of rolls of film and a lot of scans to get up to $10,000 if your initial investment is $900. So I think this is another scenario when you want to step outside of your normal Micro Four Thirds, APS-C, or even full-frame sensor camera, and work in medium format, work in a larger format. And remember, it's not just the pixels, it's the way the lenses interact with the sensor, all that kind of stuff. You know, all the physics of medium format. When you want to work with that, to me, analog makes more sense for most of us who are casual photographers in the medium format world than it does to buy or even rent the digital versions. So that is another alternative where I think medium format rocks in film. And I'll tell you, shooting 120 film with, let's say, a Hasselblad or a Fujifilm camera, it's a blast. It's a blast. And those big negatives or those big chromes are beautiful. They are gorgeous. Oh my, yeah. That'll make your heart go pitter-patter. Number three, archive for the ages. And you know, I've talked about this before, both with printing and with film, but the fact of the matter is that properly handled film has a very long life expectancy, and what's really important is that it is device independent. You do not need a device. A lot of times the way that I check my negs when they come back from the lab, I do have a light box and I do have a loop, and I can do that if I need to. But a lot of times I don't. I just open up the box, I pull out the strip of negatives, I hold it up to the light, and I'm looking at pictures. Now, my great-great-grandson could do that years from now, the same way that I'm doing it right now, and wouldn't need anything other than some sort of light source and a good pair of eyes. That's all you need to do that. And if you take good care of your film, as I do, I store it in, you know, archival sleeves, and I don't leave it laying out in the sun and all that good stuff, then the life expectancy is, it's a long time. Who knows? I'm looking at pictures in museum all the time that are, you know, well over 100 years old. This is something that I think is interesting. And I'll tell you, a lot of what I shoot on film is a slice of life, family, and friends. And the reason why I do that is because those are the kind of shots that I think over time become more important. For instance, when I'm shooting slice of life, if I'm visiting somewhere, I make sure I get the cars in the shot, because the cars are one of the things that 50 years from now, those will be interesting. In addition to whatever the primary subject of the shot is, having cars and things like that, that really do lock images in a place and time, that's cool. That's cool. And then, of course, people shots. People shots on film are wonderful. There's something about portraits and snapshots on film of people that we like and care about, that it just works. It's just a combination that works. And the fact that those images can be around for a very long time, regardless of any devices, is a beautiful thought. It really is. Improving your skills as a photographer. And I'll tell you, if you want to get motivated to sharpen your skills again, just go ahead, put a roll of film in the camera. I know you got a camera in the closet somewhere there. Pull it out, dust it off, put a battery in there, put a roll of film in there, and go shoot like you've been shooting with your digital camera. Just go out and shoot the same way. And then when you get that roll of film back from the lab and the exposures are all over the map and you're embarrassed to even let anyone else see that roll of film, you want to just, like, you know, roll it back up and put it in the desk drawer, then you will be motivated to maybe sharpen up a little bit as a photographer. Because I have to tell you that for almost all of us, shooting digital RAWs has made us a little lazy at the capture phase. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's happened to me too. It's very natural. We have this tremendous dynamic range. We have these great post-production tools. And we just sort of feel like, you know what? If there's any information at all to be captured, I'll capture it and I could probably pull it out in post. And I think shooting a roll of film once a month and being careful about our exposures and really trying to create a strip of negatives or a box of slides that are all well exposed, all 36 of them, doing that once a month, shooting a roll of film once a month or so, I think will really help us stay sharp at capture as digital photographers. And I'll tell you, if you have an analog camera bouncing around somewhere, clean it up, put a roll of film in it, and test what I'm talking about here. And let me know how it goes. And then finally, oh my gosh, and this is one I'm a little embarrassed to say, but I have to say because it's true. But it's the cameras themselves. These cameras that were made in the 80s and the 90s and even early 2000, some of them are just so cool. And it doesn't make any difference really what brand. I mean, we all have our favorite brands, but whether it's Nikon or Canon or Pentax or Minolta or Contax, I tell you, each of those companies made some very cool cameras then. Having access to a camera that just makes you crazy, you will go out and shoot with it. And, you know, this is interesting. I've really paid attention to how this works on me. And what happens is that, yes, I'm using my digital during work. Of course I am, right? I'm not stupid. I don't have a go broke wish, right? I'm using my digital during work. But my tendency, like other people's, could be that after the workday is done, have a nice bite to eat, maybe park it, and maybe never unpark it for the rest of the night. When I shoot analog a lot is on my free time, for me. And what happens is, because I like some of these cameras so much, that I will get up off the couch and go take some pictures. And then also because I shoot an iPhone shot for every analog shot that I do, because I want that digital information, and I marry the two together. I talked about this in my analog film class that I did out of Chicago. I marry the two together, which I just love having metadata for my analog work, and the iPhone provides that for me. But a collateral benefit has been then I have these cool shots on my iPhone that I never would have got off the couch to shoot either, because I was recording the data backups for my analog shots. And a lot of the stuff that you see on Instagram, if you follow me on Instagram, are the digital iPhone versions of the shots that I'm shooting with an analog camera that I probably never would have done if it hadn't been for analog photography, because I'd probably be sitting on the couch watching the San Francisco Giants lose another game. Sorry, Giants fans, that's just the way it is. And, you know, that's something that I think is fascinating. So I think not only has the analog made me a better photographer, going back to maybe pay more attention at capture, I think it gets me up and makes me be a photographer more often, which in turn also makes me better. And a lot of that is driven by the love of using those cameras. I want to go out and press the shutter button and wind the film and make an exposure, because I really dig these cameras. And then I can't wait to see what comes back from the lab. So to me, those are five scenarios where analog really does make more sense. I'm guessing, like I said earlier, that you probably have an analog camera banging around somewhere or have access to one. Try it out. Just put a roll of film in it. Be careful with the exposures. See what you can do. See what you can do. And then after you get the film back, see how you feel. And I'm always open to hearing about this, because this is an area that it just fascinates me. And the more that I talk to people, correspond with people through the film camera shop, the more interested I am in this way of photography. It's really something else. Using the intervalometer with Cascabel 3. This is a feature that I really dig in Cascabel 3. And as you may recall, if you've been listening to earlier podcasts this month, Cascabel 3 is an iOS app that allows us via Wi-Fi to communicate with our cameras and do all sorts of cool things. And all sorts of cameras, Sony, Fuji, Canon, Nikon, Olympus, Panasonic. And all we have to do is turn on the Wi-Fi for our camera. Cascabel finds it. And then once it finds it, then we can do cool things. And one of the cool things that I want to talk about today, I've been talking about cool things in the past, but the intervalometer is pretty nice feature. And so that I thought, okay, I'm going to focus on that today because it's one that I really like. Now, Cascabel has this thing called the Shutter Robot, and it's really a collection of modules. And these modules do different things, and the intervalometer is one of those modules. So if you have the Pro version, this is a feature of the Pro version, the intervalometer, not the robot itself. Some of the features of the robot are free and some are part of the Pro version. Intervalometer is part of the Pro. So you go to the robot and you choose intervalometer, and you have some cool things that you can do here. Now, the main thing, of course, that most of us use this feature for, whether it's with Cascabel or some other way, and Olympus has it built in, it's just not as flexible as what I get with Cascabel, is that we can capture a sequence of frames at a specified time period in between each capture, and then we can build a time-lapse afterwards and make a time-lapse video. And it's really a lot of fun, and these are great. With Cascabel, I have some basic parameters, but they're very flexible. So first of all, I need to set the interval. And so it can be as short as 1 second. In other words, a frame every second, boom, 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 like that. Or the interval can be as long as 59 minutes, 59 seconds. So depending on what your subject is and how long this is all going to be going on, you can choose anything between 1 second and essentially 1 hour in between frames. That is flexibility. A lot of power right there. Then you have to set the stop parameter. This all only takes a few seconds, by the way, to do. The stop parameter, you have three options. So you have manual, which means you just tell it when to stop. Because, you know, you're looking at the images there on your iPhone, if you wish, and you say, okay, I got it, stop. Or after a fixed number of shots, for example, let's say after 500 shots, then you want it to stop, so you could put that in. Or after a fixed amount of time, and isn't that nice? After a fixed amount of time. So you don't even have to worry about how many shots it is, right? You know that you want to capture something over the period of 4 hours, and you know you want the frames to be 5 seconds apart. You don't have to worry about how many frames. You just put after 4 hours. It stops. I love that. That right there sold me on it. Anyway, so once you have those couple things set up, then you just hit the engage button, tap on it. And then once you do that, the robot is engaged, is ready to go. And then when you tap the shutter release, then it begins the sequence. And you're tapping the shutter release on your iPhone, so you don't even have to be standing near your camera. So if you're doing a time lapse of, let's say, a chick being born, then you know you probably don't want to be standing right there. You set up the camera, step back, maybe be back in another room or something, and you're controlling the whole thing and viewing the whole thing there on your iPhone. Really nice. So Caskable is available in the iOS App Store. We also have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. And you can download the app for free. And a lot of the features, most of the features that I've been talking about this month have been free. But then if you want some of the higher end stuff, like this feature that I was just talking about today, then you can subscribe for $2 a month. Or it can be unlocked for a one-time $29.99 fee, $29. So that's up to you on how you want to do that. They are terrific to work with. I really enjoyed working with the Caskable folks, and I love their application. And you know, when a sponsor comes to me and says, you know, we really like your audience and we think your audience is a good fit for what we're doing, will you take a look at our product? And then I look at the product, and like in this case here with Caskable, and I go, oh my gosh, I'm just happy that I know about this app now, right? You know, the sponsorship is great, but I'm just happy I know about this app. And this has been the case with working with these folks. They've been a delight to work with. I love their app. I will be using their app from, you know, going forward. And I think you would enjoy it too. And a big thanks to Caskable for sponsoring this week's show. I just have this one short anecdote I want to tell you. I've actually wanted to tell you this story for a couple weeks now, and it keeps getting bumped out of the show because there's been so much going on. And this week, technically, I should bump it again because I'm running long, but I'm going to get it in. And it's called You Don't Always Have to Take the Shot. And this is just a short moment in time. A few weeks ago, I was out with my family on a boat down in Southern California. And we were out for, you know, it was a family moment we were having. And my uncle, it was his boat, and he took us out of Balboa Harbor, and we went out in the open sea a bit. And my younger brother, who's 11 years younger than me, who's one of the nicest human beings I have ever met, and sometimes has the same capacity as me to be very kid-like. And he wanted to steer the ship, and he had never done that before. And so I'm up in the, you know, the top deck there with my uncle, who's the captain. And my brother was up there, and I was up there, just the three of us, and we were talking. And then at one point, once we kind of navigated through most of the traffic in the marina there, my uncle says, "You want to steer?" And he hands the wheel over to my brother. And the look on my brother's face was just, it was just priceless. And I was there with my camera. I had been taking pictures. And there was a part of me that really wanted to take the shot. And I didn't. And that's why I say the title of this is that you don't always have to take the shot. Because if I had pulled out my camera and taken the shot, I really feel like it would have changed that moment. And that was a moment that, in all honesty, I don't need a picture to remember. I will always remember that moment. And I'll never forget the joy on his face and the excitement, and just the overall vibe was just wonderful. And I didn't want to mess it up. I really didn't want to mess it up. I didn't want to distract him, and I didn't want him worrying about, hey, he's going to capture me when I'm having this joyous moment. Will I look goofy? You know, all that stuff that starts to happen. So I left the camera in the bag. I did not take the photo. And I think that sometimes in life, there are those moments that we just need to leave the camera inside the camera bag and just enjoy what is happening around us. I have it in my mind, and it's just, you know, worth $1 million to me. Alrighty, we have a Nimble Classroom coming up on September 9th, Expert Editing with Capture One Pro. And we have a seat open on that if you're interested in that class. And like I mentioned last week, I learned so much on the first class, and I'm just chomping at the bit to do this September 9. I've done some equipment upgrading. I've done all sorts of stuff. I've been a really busy little beaver. On September 23rd, we're going to do Pro Techniques for Luminar. And then on November 4th, we still have some seats open for the second installment of Photos 3 for macOS. The first one sold out. I opened up a second class because the first one sold out so quickly. And we have a few seats left on that, November 4th, where we're going to look at the new Photos 3, and I'm going to get you up to speed on it. And I'll tell you, that app is evolving nicely. You can learn more about it by just going to thenimblephotographer.com and then clicking on Nimble Classroom. It's up there. Classroom is up there in the top nav bar. It'll show you all the classes. Sign up for them. Oh, and one other thing about workshops is that the Autumn in Wine Country Photography Workshop just sold out. So now we sold out of all of our workshops for the whole season, our physical workshops. I think this is probably our best workshop season ever, and I'm already working on next year. Pretty excited about that. And speaking of support, a big thanks to our Patreon members who are helping me, you know, run this like a real business. Podcasting is coming of age, and we're right there with it. You know, we're the early adopters, and I'm able to survive, you know, this early phase because of you guys. A lot of podcasters, and we all know this, have gone by the wayside over the last few years. I'm still here because you're helping to support this show, and our Patreon members are the backbone of that support. A big thanks to all of you who are members of our inner circle and keeping this show on the air. And finally, a super huge thanks to Red River Paper. I just sent some people over there today. I did some prints on Sunday. I came back to the studio just to do some prints because I could have done them at home with a laser printer on regular paper. And there were aerial shots of the house that I'm using for planning and doing some landscaping work. And I just didn't want them on crappy paper. So I drove back to the studio and I printed them out on some wonderful matte paper. They look so good. They feel so good. You hand them to the people that you're working on the project with, and they're going, wow, these are really nice aerial shots captured with the Spark. Yes, it's worth it to do it on good paper, and Red River Paper is the best. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and a big thanks to them for keeping this show on the air as well. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I know I'm very passionate about all this sort of stuff, but it's just so exciting. And I want you to get caught up in the excitement too, because photography, this is something that we can do for the rest of our lives and love every minute along the way. Until next Tuesday, have a great week. See you then. Bye-bye now.